Cimmerine whirled, and Tyrell stood in the doorway, staff in hand, watching them with an intolerably smug expression. 13, in which Alianora discovers an unexpected use for soap and water, and Cimmerine has difficulty with a dragon. Antarel looked past Cimmerine and Alianora as if they were not there, and spoke directly to the stone prince.
I told Father someone was listening. He won't be happy when he finds out I was right. But he'll feel better when I tell him I've taken care of things. He might even let me have the first look in the king's crystal once Warog gives it to us.
So that's what you're after.
Aunt Terrell favored her with a superior smile.
Quite right, Princess Cimmerine. The king's crystal will show us the whereabouts of every piece of useful and interesting magic in the world. All we'll have to do is go out and pick them up.
Somehow I don't think it will be that easy.
We knew Tokaz would never give it to us, but Warog will, as soon as he's king of the dragons. He'll have to, or we'll tell everyone how we were the ones who made sure he was the new king. Of course, we can't afford to have anybody around who might make awkward revelations. I doubt that dragons will listen to a couple of hysterical princesses, but he...
And Tyrell pointed at the stone prince.
...will have to go.
What are you going to do?
Alianora demanded. She was plainly frightened, and Cimmerine could see that her knuckles were white with the force of her grip on the handle of the scrub bucket.
Oh, gravel seems appropriate, don't you think? No one will notice a few more rocks around here.
Ought I to be taking this person seriously?
You'd better if you don't want to end up as a lot of little pebbles,
Alianora answered. She still sounded frightened, but she seemed to be getting a grip on herself.
He's a wizard.
You wouldn't be talking about gravel if you were the one who had to sweep the floor,
Cimmerine said to Aunt Terrell. She stepped forward as she spoke, hoping to get between Aunt Terrell and the Stone Prince before Aunt Terrell noticed what she was doing. She didn't think Aunt Terrell was a good enough wizard to do any real harm, but there was no point in taking chances.
Stay where you are, Princess Cimmerine. I'll deal with you in a moment.
Must you be so theatrical?
Theatrical? You think I'm being theatrical? I am simply showing a proper respect for the importance of this moment.
You're showing off, and you're not doing it very well.
He doesn't sound much like a wizard to me. Is he always like this?
Enough!
And Tyrell cried and raised his staff. Light shimmered along its length and began to gather at the lower end. Grinning wolfishly, the wizard tilted the staff, aiming it toward the stone prince.
Stop that!
Alianora said. Antarel ignored her.
I said stop it!
Alianora shouted and threw her bucket at Antarel's head. Alianora's aim was off. The bucket hit Antarel's shoulder. A bolt of fire shot from the end of his staff and whizzed between Cimmerine and the stone prince to strike the far wall with a whomping noise and a shower of sparks. And Terrell staggered, slipped in the cascade of soapy water, and fell over the bucket, dropping his staff in the process. Cimmerine darted in and kicked Anterell's staff out of his reach. He stared up at her from a mound of soggy silk and soap suds.
You can't do this to me!
Something in his voice made Cimmerine and her friends look at him more closely. Alianora's eyes went wide, and Cimmerine blinked in surprise.
He's collapsing.
He's melting,
Cimmerine corrected her.
I can't be melting. I'm a wizard. It's not fair.
His head disappeared into a small brown puddle, and his cries stopped. There was a moment of astonished silence.
I thought it was witches who melt when you dump water over them,
the stone prince said at last.
It is, usually. What on earth did you put in that bucket, Alianora?
Just water and soap and a little lemon juice to make it smell nicer.
Said Cimmerine, thinking hard.
I'll bet there's a simpler way of melting wizards, but we don't have time right now to figure out what it is. How many buckets can you get hold of in a hurry?
Buckets? Two, counting this one. And I suppose I could borrow one from Halana. That's three.
And I've got two in the kitchen, And I expect the iron kettle is big enough. That's 6 altogether, 2 for each of us. You will help, won't you?
Cimmerine added, turning to the stone prince.
Of course. Help with what?
Stopping those wizards. We can't let them make Warog the next king of the dragons by trickery.
I don't see how we can stop them. We can't possibly get to the Ford of Whispering Snakes before the trials start. And even if we could, we don't know where the wizards will be hiding.
If we tell the dragons that Warog's trying to cheat, they'll stop the trials,
Cimmerine said with more confidence than she felt.
That will give us time to find the wizards. And I've got a way to get us to the Ford. You go start collecting buckets. I'll meet you at your place after I get the things I'll need from Kazool's.
What about...
Eleonora gestured with distaste at the wet, messy lump of robes in the center of the puddle that was all that remained of Aunt Terrell.
We'll clean it up when we get back. This is more important.
Eleonora nodded, and the three left the banquet room. The Stone Prince decided to accompany Eleonora, since he was not a fast walker and Cimmerine had farther to go. Cimmerine left them when they reached the main tunnel and ran back to Kazool's cave. There she went straight to her room and opened the drawer where she kept odds and ends. In the back left-hand corner, carefully wrapped in a handkerchief, were the 3 black feathers she had taken from beneath the left wing of the bird she had killed in the enchanted forest. She shoved the whole packet into her pocket without bothering to unwrap it and went on to the kitchen to collect her buckets. Then she hurried through the tunnels to Warog's cave, where Eleonora and the Stone Prince were waiting. When Cimmerine arrived, she found the Stone Prince pumping water to fill Eleonora's 3rd bucket, while Eleonora mixed soap and lemon juice into the 2nd. Cimmerine set her pots and pails next to the pump and went to help Eleonora.
Now what?
Eleonora said when all the buckets were full of cleaning mixture. Cimmerine reached into her pocket and dug out the package. Gently, she unfolded the handkerchief and removed one of the feathers, noticing as she did that the package also contained the pebble she had picked up in the Caves of Fire and Night.
If we each take 2 buckets, can we still link elbows without spilling too much?
Eleonora and the Stone Prince looked at each other, shrugged, and picked up 2 buckets each. Cimmerine took the last bucket and the iron pot, holding the handle of the pot with only 3 fingers, so that she could keep a grip on the feather with her thumb and forefinger. A series of awkward maneuvers followed as Eleonora and the Stone Prince tried to link elbows with Cimmerine without losing their balance or dropping one of their buckets. In the process, Cimmerine's skirt got soaked.
It's a good thing I'm not a wizard. Ready? Here we go.
She twisted her hand toward the edge of the iron pot and let go of the black feather.
I wish we were at the Ford of Whispering Snakes,
she said as the feather fell and the room dissolved around them. They materialized at the very edge of a river, on a flat, narrow rock that jutted out over the water, and Eleonora immediately slipped on the wet stone. If the Stone Prince had not been so solid and heavy, all 3 of them would have fallen into the river. As it was, it took Cimmerine and Eleonora several seconds to regain their balance. When she was finally sure of her footing, Cimmerine breathed a sigh of relief and quickly looked about her. The Ford of Whispering Snakes was crowded. Dragons of all sizes and shades of green lined the banks of the river and filled the spaces beneath the towering trees of the enchanted forest. On the far bank, a pale dragon was poring over a parchment list that Cimmerine thought she remembered seeing during one of the many errands she had run the previous night. All the dragons seemed to be talking at once, and none of them noticed Cimmerine and her friends.
Hello, dragons!
Cimmerine shouted, trying to make herself heard above the noise.
Here now, what's all this?
An olive-green dragon on the bank demanded, turning.
Someone's trying to sneak a look at the trials.
Sneaks!
Hissed a soft but nonetheless clearly audible voice from somewhere near Cimmerine's feet. Cimmerine jumped and looked down, but though she craned her neck to see all around her, she could not find the 2nd speaker.
Get rid of them, before Traum comes back with Colin Stone,
another dragon advised.
We aren't trying to sneak in, and we don't care about watching the trials,
Cimmerine said, wishing she dared to look around for Kazool.
We came to warn you about the wizards.
Wizards,
the soft voice echoed.
Wizards?
The olive-green dragon said skeptically.
There aren't any wizards here.
No, but they figured out some way of interfering with your choice of the next king. They're hiding somewhere. You have to put off the trials with Colin Stone until we can find them and stop them. If you'll just tell Kazool we're here...
Put off the trials? Impossible. They've been underway for half an hour. We can't just stop in the middle. Who are all you people anyway?
A flicker of motion caught Cimmerine's eye, and she looked down just in time to see a thin red snake dart from one clump of weeds to the next.
Sneaks,
whispered the soft voice an instant later.
Sneaks and wizards.
I wasn't asking you,
the dragon said severely, in the general direction of the snake.
And whatever they are, they certainly aren't wizards.
They look like somebody's princesses to me,
a blue-green dragon said.
Pity that. It would be so much simpler to eat them and get them out of the way.
Are you sure?
Said a third dragon.
The one on the end doesn't look like a princess.
I'm beginning to think this wasn't such a good idea.
He may not be a princess, but he doesn't look edible either,
the blue-green dragon pointed out.
And these other two are definitely princesses. You can't go eating them out of hand.
Princesses,
hissed the voice from under the rock.
Oh, princesses,
the olive-green dragon said.
No wonder they're so full of wild tales.
It's true. If you don't believe us, take us to Kazool. She will.
I can't do that,
the olive-green dragon said, shocked.
Kazool's third in line now, after Mazarin and Warog. You can't talk to people who are that close to making their attempt with the stone. It would distract them.
Warog? Warog's next in line?
Yes, he should be starting off any minute now,
said the olive-green dragon.
Then comes Mazarin, and then Kazool. I don't expect it will take long, though. Nobody's carried the stone for more than a mile or two yet.
But I'm Kazool's princess.
I don't care who you are. You can't talk to Kazool until she's done with her turn.
That will be too late. You don't understand. Warog and the wizard...
I've had enough of your wizards. You're a confounded nuisance, and you ought not to be pushing your way in here where you're not wanted. Go away!
Cimmerine, what are we going to do?
Eleonora said as the olive-green dragon turned and stalked determinedly away.
At Heroes School, we were always taught that if you couldn't persuade anyone to help you with something, it meant that you were supposed to do it by yourself,
the stone prince said diffidently.
And we are prepared.
He lifted one of his buckets slightly.
But we don't know where the wizards are. We have to find them before we can stop them, and there isn't time.
Stop the wizards,
whispered the soft voice.
That's the first sensible thing you've said since we got here,
Cimmerine said to the hissing whisper.
Can't you just wish to be where the wizards are?
The stone prince asked Cimmerine.
No, you have to know where you're going or the spell doesn't work.
For a moment, all three were glumly silent. Cimmerine stared at the water, remembering how and where she had gotten the feathers. Suddenly, she raised her head.
We may not know where the wizards are, but I'll bet I know someone who can find out. Hold this for a minute.
Cimmerine handed one of her buckets to Eleonora, then dug out the packet of feathers. She pulled the second feather from the packet and grabbed Eleonora's elbow.
Hold tight, everybody. I wish we were at Morwen's house,
Cimmerine said and dropped the feather. The scenery shifted abruptly, and they were standing on Morwen's porch. The house was just as tidy-looking as Cimmerine remembered, and the porch floor gleamed as if it had just been washed. A black-and-white cat, startled by their sudden appearance, fell off the porch railing. Four others left off washing themselves to stare at Cimmerine with unwinking green and yellow eyes.
I need to talk to Morwen,
Cimmerine said to the cats.
It's an emergency.
A lean, tiger-striped cat rose and oozed through a crack in the door. Cimmerine unwound herself from Eleonora and the stone prince and set her bucket on the porch floor.
I hope this works,
she muttered to herself, as Eleonora and the prince placed their buckets beside hers. 14. In which the wizards try to make trouble, and Cimmerine does something about it. The door of the cottage opened, and Morwen stepped out.
What sort of emergency?
She asked. She studied Alianora and the Stone Prince for a moment, then peered at Cimmerine over the tops of her glasses and added with some severity,
I hope you weren't referring to his predicament. He may well find it an inconvenience, but it certainly isn't an emergency, not by my standards anyway.
No, I was talking about the wizards. They've poisoned the King of the Dragons, and now they're trying to interfere with Colin Stone so that Warog will be the new king. We have to stop them. But we don't know where they are, and Warog's going to try to carry the stone any minute. Can you find them for us?
Morwen blinked twice and shoved her glasses back into place with her forefinger.
I see. You're right. It's an emergency. I'll do what I can. But if you don't tell me the whole story later when there's a bit more time, I shall turn you all into mice and give you to the cats. Wait here.
As she spoke, Morwen disappeared into the house. She reappeared a moment later, holding a small mirror and muttering over it.
Colin Stone,
she said, and breathed on the glass. She looked up.
Any wizard in particular?
Zeminar, the head wizard of the Society of Wizards,
Cimmerine said, wishing Morwen would go faster and knowing she couldn't.
I should have guessed,
Morwen said. She turned back to the mirror.
Zeminar,
she said, and breathed on the glass once more. Then she motioned to Cimmerine to come and look. Cimmerine obeyed, and Alianora and the Stone Prince crowded closely behind her. The mirror showed a blurry, wavering picture of the Ford of Whispering Snakes. As Cimmerine watched, the picture moved slowly along one bank of the river, past the waiting dragons and the immense trees of the enchanted forest, and on down the river.
Can't it go any faster?
There's no need to whisper, and no, it can't. Not if you want to be sure of finding these wizards of yours on the first try, and it doesn't sound as if you have time to waste on mistakes.
The picture in the mirror continued to creep along the bank. Cimmerine pulled the third and last feather out of her pocket and brushed it nervously across her fingers while she waited.
What's that?
The Stone Prince said suddenly. The mirror picture stopped, then moved up the bank, away from the river toward a thicket of blackberry brambles. Cimmerine saw the tip of a wooden staff poking up above the thicket. Tensely, she waited for the mirror to show the far side of the brambles.
It's them! Oh, dear!
Cimmerine took a good look at the picture in the mirror. Five wizards were standing in an opening behind the blackberry thicket, leaning on their staffs and looking at the sky. Suddenly, one of the wizards pointed. The others peered upward, nodded, and raised their staffs.
Get the buckets,
Cimmerine said. Cats scattered in all directions as the Stone Prince pounded across the porch behind Cimmerine and Alianora.
Hang on. Here we go. I wish...
Not without me, you...
Morwen said, grabbing Cimmerine's shoulder.
We were at the blackberry thicket where the wizards are,
Cimmerine said and dropped the feather.
Don't...
Morwen finished as the porch winked out and was replaced by blackberries. The five wizards were standing in an arc just in front of the bramble. Each of them held his staff so that the lower end was about a foot above the ground, pointing at something hidden in the moss at their feet. An unpleasant yellow-green light dripped from the ends of the staffs, and the moss where the wizards were standing was brown and dead. The wizards' backs were toward Cimmerine and her friends.
Now!
Cimmerine cried. As the wizards began to turn, she set one of her buckets on the ground and lifted the other in both hands. Taking careful aim, she flung the soapy water over a black-haired wizard in the center of the arc.
Charge!
Yelled the Stone Prince, and threw one of his buckets at the nearest wizard.
Take that, you cheats!
Said Alianora, dumping the first of her buckets over another.
What? This is impossible!
Said one of the wizards indignantly as he began to melt.
Too bad!
Cimmerine said, throwing her second load of water at the next-to-last wizard.
What were you throwing that?
Morwen said to the Stone Prince, who had sloshed his second bucket over the fifth wizard with such enthusiasm that water sprayed in all directions.
Sorry. Is that all of them?
It's all five of the ones we saw.
Then we did it!
Not quite,
said Zeminar, stepping out of the bushes behind Morwen.
You interrupted the spell, of course, but we were nearly finished anyway. And as long as the stone remains enchanted, Warog won't have any trouble getting it all the way to the Vanishing Mountain. Look!
He pointed with his staff, and Cimmerine saw three dragons, high in the air, flying steadily toward the mountains. One of them had a long black stone clutched in his claws, and the other two appeared to be escorting him at a careful distance.
Warog and the two judges.
Zeminar nodded.
You might as well put that bucket down.
He went on, turning to Alianora.
You can't throw it at me without melting your witch friend here. What's in it, by the way?
I don't see why we should tell you,
Cimmerine said as Alianora set the last of the six buckets down.
Because I'm interested, Princess. And it will pass the time until the next shift gets here, and I can decide what to do with you.
If you're that interested, why don't you take a closer look?
Said the Stone Prince, picking up Alianora's bucket.
Stay where you are,
Zeminar commanded. As he spoke, he raised his staff and sidestepped so that Morwen was between him and the Stone Prince.
If you insist,
said the prince. He shrugged, lifted the bucket, and flung the water over Morwen and Zeminar at the same time.
What? No!
Zeminar cried in horror as he began to melt.
Not soapsuds. It's demeaning.
There's a little lemon juice in it, too.
Zeminar glared at her. He was less than half his normal height and shrinking as they watched, while a dark puddle spread out beneath him.
Lemon juice! Bah! How dare you do such a thing? I'm the head wizard of the Society of Wizards!
His voice grew fainter and higher as he shrank.
Interfering busybodies, soapsuds! Of all the undignified tricks, you'll be sorry for this. You can't melt a wizard forever, you know. You'll be sorry.
The wizard's voice ceased. All that remained of him was a pile of silk robes and a long wooden staff lying on some damp moss. Alianora and Cimmerine stared for a moment. Then Alianora turned to the Stone Prince.
I'm glad he's gone. But how could you melt Morwen just to get at that wizard?
But I didn't. Look!
Cimmerine and Alianora turned. Morwen seemed no shorter than usual, though she certainly looked very damp. She had taken off her glasses and was shaking water off them.
Don't just stand there,
she said crossly to Cimmerine.
Hand me a dry handkerchief.
Just a minute, Cimmerine said, checking her pockets. She found the handkerchief that had been wrapped around the magic feathers and handed it to Morwen.
Why didn't you melt?
Clean living,
Morwen said as she began to dry her glasses on Cimmerine's handkerchief.
I thought as much,
the Stone Prince said in a satisfied tone.
Nobody who lives in a house as clean as yours could possibly melt in a bucket of soap suds.
Quite right,
Morwen said approvingly.
You have a good head on your shoulders, young man. What's this?
She held up a sharp-edged black pebble.
It's a piece of stone I found in the caves of fire and night.
Where exactly?
In the king's cave. Morwen, shouldn't we do something about that spell Zeminar mentioned?
Alianora was watching the sky, shading her eyes with her hand.
Warog's nearly halfway to the mountain.
Good,
said Morwen, though neither Cimmerine nor Alianora could tell which of them she was talking to. The witch shook her wet robes and walked over to the patch of dead moss where the wizards had been working, picking her way carefully past little piles of robes and staffs. Cimmerine followed. In the center of the brown area was a black stone, the size of Cimmerine's fist. A web of yellow-green light flickered across its smooth surface.
Sloppy, very sloppy, though I'm not surprised. Wizards always seem to depend on brute force, when a little subtlety would be far more effective.
She fingered Cimmerine's pebble for a moment, then reached out and dropped it on top of the wizard's stone. There was a noise like a great deal of popcorn all popping at once, and the light that flickered over the black stone spat yellow-green sparks in all directions. Alianora jumped and backed away. Simmerine would have liked to do the same, but she did not want to give Morwen a bad impression of her courage, so she stayed where she was. The sparks died, and the flickering light went out. From the sky high above came a faint shriek of surprise and rage. Simmerine looked up and saw three black specks in the sky. No, not three. Four. And the two escort dragons were swooping to catch the speck that was Colin's stone, which Warog had just dropped. Simmerine gave a sigh of relief and looked at Morwen.
So much for Warog and the wizards. We didn't even need the fireproofing spell. What did you do?
And what happens now?
Stop! Said Morwen, and threw herself sideways into the bushes.
What?
Said the stone prince, and then he and Simmerine and Alianora were engulfed by a blast of dragon fire. The stone prince leaped in front of the two princesses, but he was much too late to protect them. Fortunately, the fireproofing spell was still in effect, and neither of them even felt warm. Though Alianora lost the ends of her sleeves, and Simmerine's hemline rose 6 scorched inches.
I knew I shouldn't have said that about the fireproofing spell.
With a wordless snarl and a thunder of wings, Warog landed just in front of the little group.
You!
He shouted when he saw Simmerine.
I might have known it would be you.
Flame shot from his mouth once more, but it was just as useless as it had been the first time. Simmerine glanced up and saw one of the escort dragons spiraling down to see what was going on.
You might as well give up, Warog,
she said, hoping to distract the angry dragon long enough for help to arrive.
You can't be king of the dragons now.
I'll tear you limb from limb. Every last one of you.
One arm shot out as he spoke, and shining silver claws snapped around the stone prince's waist. Alianora screamed.
Hurry up!
Simmerine shouted at the dragon in the sky. The dragon heard and dove toward them, but he was not fast enough. Warog shoved the stone prince into his mouth and bit down hard. An instant later, he howled in pain and spat out the prince and 4 teeth.
What is all this?
Said the escort dragon, landing carefully beside Warog. The clearing was getting rather crowded.
A plot to cheat on the test to see who the next king of the dragons will be. Warog was in it, and a lot of wizards.
Are you all right?
Alianora asked the stone prince, who was just picking himself up. His stone was black in places from the dragon fire, but otherwise he seemed unhurt.
More or less. But just look what that fire did to my clothes. And that dragon's put a chip in my sleeve. What am I supposed to do about that? It's not as if I can just change clothes when I get home, you know.
That's ridiculous,
the escort dragon told Simmerine.
No dragon would cooperate with wizards. I don't see any wizards either. I think you're making it up.
Of course you don't see any wizards. We melted them.
Melted them?
Where do you think those staffs came from?
Simmerine pointed at the wizard staffs lying across the scattered brown puddles. The dragon backed up a pace and sniffed experimentally.
It's all quite true,
Morwen said, poking her head out of the bushes.
And we'll be more than happy to explain the whole thing to your new king as soon as you have one, provided, of course, that you take that maniac away before he burns the whole enchanted forest to the ground.
She gestured at Warog.
Simmerine, I really must insist on getting a copy of that fireproofing spell. It will clearly be worth every minute of the months of hunting it will take me to find some hen's teeth, and I may as well get started as soon as I can.
Who's that? Morwen? That does it. This is too much for me. I'm taking you all into custody until the trials are over, and the king can sort it out. Come along.
I assume that doesn't apply to me.
Warog rumbled. He winced as he spoke.
It certainly does. I said all, and I meant all. If I'd meant all the humans, I'd have said all the humans. Or maybe some of you. Or you over there. Or all you non-dragons, or...
Nonsense! Don't you know who I am?
You're the dragon who caused a ruckus just now for no reason I can see. And it's my duty and my job to take you into custody. When the trials are over, you can explain it to the king. And if I've done something wrong, well, I'll take what I have coming. And if I haven't, you'll take yours. And...
All right, all right. But I warn you, you'll regret this.
That's as may be. Right now, though, you're in custody along with the rest of these people. And you'd better not go snacking on any of them until things are sorted out. I saw what you did to the Gray One.
Did you? Then what are you going to do about this chip in my sleeve?
Tell it to the king. Now off we go, the lot of you.
Morwen came cautiously out of the bushes, brushing leaves from her already wet black robes. She stopped and peered at the escort dragon over the tops of her glasses.
This has not been a good day for anyone's clothes,
she said severely.
I shall send the cleaning bill to your king.
Whatever you want. Come on.
Scowling furiously, Warog marched off into the forest. The stone prince and Alianora followed, talking in low voices. Morwen paused to pick up the wizard's black rock and Cimmerine's pebble, then went on after them. Cimmerine hesitated.
Go on.
I will, but I think you ought to know that another batch of wizards is supposed to show up soon. Zeminar said something about a second shift. I don't know what they can do without the stone they were using, but I'm sure they'll try something.
Wizards always do,
the escort dragon said with a sigh. He studied the wizard staffs that were lying around the clearing with a melancholy air.
All right. I'll send someone back to keep an eye on things as soon as we get to the ford. Whatever was going on here, there certainly were wizards in it. And that's enough for me.
Good, said Cimmerine. And thank you.
She smiled at the startled expression on the dragon's face and started after the others. XV, in which the dragons crown a new king and Cimmerine gets a new job. The walk to the ford of Whispering Snakes took longer than Cimmerine expected. The trees of the enchanted forest grew close together in many places, forcing the dragons to take a zigzag path instead of heading straight up the bank of the river. Warog, who was in the lead, seemed to be deliberately setting a slow pace. Cimmerine was sure he was hoping that the second shift of wizards would arrive at the Blackberry Clearing before the dragons at the ford had been warned. She had no idea what would happen then, but she doubted that it would be good. The escort dragon was not interested in Cimmerine's worries, however, and he refused to speed things up, so the group ambled on. As they approached the ford at last, they heard cheering ahead of them. Warog flinched visibly, and Alianora and the Stone Prince were startled out of their quiet conversation.
What's that?
Alianora said.
Sounds to me as if we have a new king,
their escort said with great satisfaction.
That means I can get you lot off my hands right away. What a relief. I thought I was going to be stuck with you for hours.
Alianora looked faintly indignant at this unflattering opinion. Morwen was merely amused. Warog's wings sagged momentarily, but then he seemed to pull himself back together, and he continued on as confidently as ever. Cimmerine's concern deepened. What if Warog managed to convince the new king that they were all lying? They reached the edge of the cheering crowd of dragons.
Who did it?
The escort dragon asked.
Who's the new king?
How should I know?
The other responded.
I can't see a thing from way out here.
You'll find out soon enough,
the escort dragon said. Then he raised his voice and shouted,
Make way! Coming through! Prisoners for the king! Make way!
The crowd of dragons parted reluctantly, and the escort dragon herded the group forward, still shouting. They made their way through the cheering dragons until they reached the edge of the river.
Stand away!
Shouted someone in the crowd.
Stand away for the king!
The nearby dragons drew back, leaving Warog, the escort dragon, and Cimmerine and her friends standing by themselves on the trampled moss. As the dragons moved away, Cimmerine caught sight of Kazool, lying comfortably beside the river.
Kazool!
Cimmerine cried and ran forward.
Are you all right?
A mottled dragon standing beside Kazool shifted and flicked his tail angrily at Cimmerine.
You should say your majesty,
he said with a warning scowl.
Don't be ridiculous, Frax. She's my princess. I'm quite all right, Cimmerine. What are you doing here?
You're the new king of the dragons? But when you left this morning, you could barely fly. How did you get Colin Stone all the way from here to the Vanishing Mountain?
Colin Stone apparently does more than merely pick out the right king. The minute I picked it up, I felt fine.
This is impossible,
Warog said.
Are you accusing me of fraud?
He'd better not. He's the one who was cheating with the help of Zeminar and the rest of the wizards.
Really?
Kazool said in tones of great interest.
It's all nonsense. The girl's just trying to attract attention.
Really?
Kazool said again and smiled, displaying all her silver teeth.
Oh, come now, Kazool. Surely you won't take a mere princess's word over mine.
That depends entirely on what she says. Tell us about it, princess.
So Cimmerine told them. She brought the stone prince forward to explain what he had overheard the wizards and Warog discussing in the banquet hall, and she made Alianora tell everyone about melting wizards with wash water and lemon juice. She told about getting to the Ford of Whispering Snakes on the first feather and being unable to convince any of the dragons to listen to her. She told about going to Morwen's house to find out where the wizards were, and about using the last feather to get to the wizards and melt them. She described Zeminar's unexpected appearance and subsequent melting, and the way Morwen had broken the wizard's spell, and she finished with an account of Warog's futile attack.
And then he landed.
Cimmerine waved in the direction of the escort dragon.
And decided to bring us all back here. And I think somebody ought to go back to that clearing where the blackberries are before the next batch of wizards arrives. I don't know what they'll do when they find out what's happened, but...
Yes, I see,
said Kazool. She turned to a pale green dragon beside her.
Take 5 or 6 of the younger dragons, the ones who've been talking about starting a wizard hunt, and go have a look at this blackberry clearing.
Yes, Your Majesty,
said the pale dragon with a fierce grin.
Surely you don't believe this.
Kazool stared at Warog without saying anything, and the dragons around the edge of the circle rattled their scales.
Your Majesty,
Warog added hastily.
Why should I disbelieve it?
Kazool said, still watching Warog.
The whole thing is preposterous. How could wizards do anything to affect Colin Stone, Your Majesty?
Kazool looked at Cimmerine.
I'm sorry, Kazool,
Cimmerine said, shaking her head.
I know what the wizards were trying to do, but I don't have the slightest idea how they were doing it.
I believe I can explain that, Your Majesty,
Morwen said. She stepped forward, tossing and catching the wizard's black rock casually in her right hand.
They were using this. I believe you'll find that it comes from the Caves of Fire and Night, from the King's Cave, in fact, where Colin's stone was found. And one of the properties of the Caves of Fire and Night is that you can use one piece to cast spells which affect similar pieces.
Just the way that impossible book says.
De Montmorency? Yes, I suppose he is fairly impossible.
Is this sufficiently similar to Colin's stone that the wizards could have affected the stone through it?
Certainly, Your Majesty.
This is...
ridiculous, impossible, and unbelievable. You've said that already. But I haven't heard you say anything particularly convincing in support of that attitude.
Oh, really, Your Majesty? Next you'll be saying I poisoned King Tokaz.
It doesn't seem likely, since Tokaz was poisoned with Dragon's Bane. And dragons can't get anywhere near the stuff without feeling the effects.
What if Zeminar made a Dragon's Bane-proof package for him to carry it in?
Cimmerine said, thinking of the bag Antarel had been carrying when she and Alianora met him in the valley.
Something that would melt when he dropped it in the king's coffee.
I suppose it's possible, But there's no evidence at all that Zeminar did any such thing.
What would it have looked like? Would it have been something like a very large tea bag?
Everyone turned to look at Alianora.
I think that would have worked quite well, Princess. Why do you ask?
Because Warog had something like that with him when he went to see King Tokaz the night before the king was killed. I saw it.
An angry muttering ran through the crowd of dragons.
Lies! They're all lies!
Are they? I don't think so. You must have wanted to be king very badly indeed.
Warog darted a glance around at the circle of dragons. What he saw did not appear to reassure him.
No!
Consorting with wizards, killing the king, and plotting to cheat in the trials with Colin Stone.
Kazul said, as if Warog had not spoken.
Hardly proper behavior for a dragon.
The crowd muttered agreement. Cimmerine looked from Warog to Kazul and back. Warog appeared to be terrified of something, but Cimmerine could not tell what it was. He crouched and seemed to shrink away from Kazul, drawing his wings in close and making himself as small as possible. Cimmerine blinked. It was remarkable how much smaller Warog could make himself look. In fact, he's shrinking.
No!
Warog cried again, but it was much too late. He shrank faster and faster, his wings melting into ridges along his back and his claws retracting. He was barely as tall as Cimmerine's shoulder. Then, with a sudden shiver, he collapsed in on himself. A small rain of scales pattered to the ground. A moment later, an extremely warty toad with angry red eyes crawled clumsily out of the center of the pile.
Is that Warog?
The toad turned and glared at her, and she stepped back a pace. The stone prince put a protective arm around Alianora's shoulders and glared back at the toad.
Behave, or I'll step on you.
Yes, it's Warog,
Kazul said. She sounded almost sad.
That's what happens when a dragon stops acting like a dragon.
The toad turned his glare in Kazul's direction, then hopped off and disappeared among the stones along the riverbank. Alianora shuddered. Kazul studied her for a moment.
You were Warog's princess, weren't you? I'm sorry about all this, but it couldn't be helped. It won't take long to find you another dragon.
I don't think you have to worry about finding her another dragon,
Cimmerine said. She had been watching Alianora and the Stone Prince, and an idea had occurred to her.
What? Why not?
Because the Stone Prince fought with Warog. And Warog certainly didn't win. Doesn't that mean that he gets to rescue Warog's princess?
I'm not sure the rules cover this situation at all, but it sounds reasonable enough, and under the circumstances, I doubt that anyone will object. Unless, of course, she does.
Oh,
said Alianora, and blushed a rosy red.
No, I don't object at all.
Are you sure? You won't mind waiting a while to marry me? I mean, if you're willing to marry me. You needn't, you know, if the idea doesn't appeal to you.
It appeals to me very much,
Alianora said, blushing redder than ever.
But why do you say that we have to wait?
The Stone Prince sighed.
I still have to find a king and do him a great service, and that's bound to take a while.
For a young man as intelligent as you seem to be, you're remarkably foolish. What on earth do you think you've just done?
An expression of astonishment spread across the prince's face.
You mean, the king I was supposed to serve is the king of the dragons?
Exactly. And I doubt that you could do her a greater service than saving the throne from Warog's plotting.
That's settled then. Let's get the rest of the ceremonies finished and get back to the mountains. There's a great deal of work to be done.
The dragons all bowed, and eddies of movement began in various sections of the crowd. Shortly, two dragons came forward carrying Colin Stone. It looked like a long black log about three times as thick as Cimmerine's waist and twice as tall as she was. The dragons laid it in front of Kazul and backed away. Another dragon appeared, holding a large circlet made of iron, with six spikes poking upward at intervals around the rim. Kazul set her front feet on the black stone, and the dragon set the circlet on her head. The crowd of dragons began cheering again, and after a few minutes they began forming a line to congratulate their new king and present their coronation gifts. Other dragons set up large tubs of wine and platters of meat and cheese, which were quickly surrounded. In the middle of the presentations, the dragons Kazul had sent off to the Blackberry Clearing returned, and Kazul took a short break from accepting congratulations to hear what they had to say.
"The wizard showed up before we'd been there more than 10 minutes, Your Majesty,"
said the pale green dragon, who was the leader of the group.
"Six of them, just like your princess said."
"They weren't happy to see us,"
the youngest dragon said smugly.
"I would think not. What did you do with them?"
"We chased 5 of them away,"
the pale dragon reported.
"I don't think they'll be back either."
5?
The pale dragon shot a glance at the youngest of the group, who licked his lips and looked even more smug than before, and said nothing.
"Yes, Your Majesty."
"I see. Well, that's more than enough evidence to confirm what Cimmerines told us,"
Kazul commented. She raised her voice.
"The arrangement between the dragons and the Society of Wizards is hereby cancelled. From now on, wizards will not be allowed anywhere near the Caves of Fire and Night, no matter what they say."
Then she went back to accepting presents and congratulations from her new subjects. Cimmerine watched the festivities with mixed feelings. She was very glad that Kazul was the new king of the dragons, but she couldn't help wondering what effect Kazul's coronation would have on her own position. The king of the dragons certainly wouldn't need a princess as a mark of status, and there would be plenty of younger dragons eager to cook and clean for their king, if only as a way of getting a start at the court. Her preoccupation stayed with her for the rest of the day, through the entire coronation picnic and the flight back to the Mountains of Morning. Cimmerine and Alianora rode on the back of a very large dragon whose scales were such a dark green that they looked almost black. Alianora would have preferred to ride with the Stone Prince, but none of the dragons were willing to take on a second passenger if the Stone Prince was the first. All of the dragons had paid their respects to Kazul at the coronation, so the cave was empty when the dragon dropped Cimmerine off. When Cimmerine said goodbye to Alianora, she promised to come over and help her pack the following morning. Then she went in and waited for Kazul to come home. Kazul did not arrive until very late. She was still wearing the iron crown, and she looked very tired.
"Thank goodness that's over,"
she said, taking the crown off and throwing it across the cave. It hit the wall and bounced off with a harsh clang.
"You shouldn't treat your crown like that, Your Majesty,"
Cimmerine said, retrieving the iron circlet.
"Of course I should. It's expected. That's why we made it out of iron instead of something soft and bendable. And don't start calling me Your Majesty. I've had enough of that for one day."
Cimmerine began to feel a little better.
"What happens next?"
"Tomorrow, we start moving. It will probably take weeks. It's too bad there's no way of warning a new king in time to pack everything up before the work starts."
"Everything? Even the library and the treasure vaults? But I've only just got them organized."
"Everything. And if you think straightening out things here was difficult, wait until you see the mess the official vaults are in."
"Oh dear, is it very bad?"
Kazul nodded.
"I've just come from looking at it. You'll see for yourself tomorrow. There's a smallish cave next to the library that I think will do nicely for you. But I'd like you to look at it before we start hauling things around."
"You mean you want me to stay? But I thought the King of the Dragons didn't need a princess."
"Don't be ridiculous. How am I going to get my Cherry's Jubilee if you don't stay? And you haven't even started cataloging the library. And how else am I going to get the King's treasure vaults arranged so I can find things? I'm not going to have time to do it."
"Won't the rest of the dragons object?"
"Ha! I'm the king. One of the advantages of being king is that nobody objects to whims like keeping a princess when you're not supposed to need one. If it bothers you, we'll give you a different title. King's cook and librarian, maybe. Stop worrying and go to sleep. Tomorrow is going to be a very busy day for both of us."
Cimmerine smiled and went off to her rooms with a light heart. She slept soundly and was up early next morning. Kazul was already awake and supervising three of the younger dragons, who were packing up the treasure and the library. Since Cimmerine was pressed into service at once, it was several hours before she could get away to keep her promise to Alianora.
"I'm sorry I'm late,"
Cimmerine apologized when she arrived at Warog's cave at last.
"But it didn't occur to me that Kazul would be moving too, and she wanted me to help."
"It's all right. It wasn't as big a job as I'd expected, and the prince helped. I'm almost finished."
She gestured at an almost full suitcase lying open on the floor. On the other side of the room, the stone prince was stacking the empty drawers from Alianora's bureau.
"Well, at least I got here in time to say goodbye."
"You're staying with the dragons, then?"
the stone prince asked, straightening with a frown.
"Are you sure you want to do that?"
"Of course she's sure. Kazul's going to need her even more than she did before, and Cimmerine wouldn't be happy in a normal kingdom."
"How did you know that?"
"It's obvious. Linderwall is about as normal a kingdom as you can get. If you ran away from there, you certainly wouldn't be happy anywhere like it."
"I didn't mean that part,"
Cimmerine said, reddening slightly.
"I meant about Kazul wanting me to stay."
"That was obvious, too. You're the only one who was worried about it."
She studied Cimmerine for a minute and shook her head.
"I wouldn't like being princess for the King of the Dragons, but it will suit you down to the ground."
"I think it will."
"Then maybe you can tell me something. What's being done about the wizards?"
"They've been banned from the Mountains of Mourning, and there are 100 or so dragons out checking to make sure they've gone. They haven't had much luck, I'm afraid. Most of the wizards left after the first few got eaten."
"That's all?"
"What else can the dragons do? The wizards didn't actually poison King Tokaz. Warog did that. So there's no justification for an all-out attack on the headquarters of the Society of Wizards, even if all the dragons agreed that they wanted to do it, which they don't."
"I suppose you're right. But you'd better tell Kazul to keep a close eye on them. Those wizards will make more trouble just as soon as they figure out a way to do it."
"I don't know about that. I think Zeminar was behind most of it, and you melted him."
"That's it,"
Alianora said and snapped her fingers.
"I almost forgot to tell you. Morwen and I talked for a long time yesterday, and she says that melting a wizard isn't permanent."
"You mean they'll all come back?"
Alianora nodded.
"It will take them a while, though. And Morwen said for you to come and visit soon. She thinks that in a few days she'll have figured out a way of melting wizards without dumping soapy water over them. A method that's a little less sloppy," was the way she put it.
"That will be useful if the wizards start making trouble again."
"Is this everything, Alianora?"
the stone prince asked, gesturing at the suitcase.
"Yes, I think so."
Alianora pulled the top of the suitcase over, and the stone prince set one foot very gently in the middle of it and pushed until the latch clicked.
"Where are you going first? His kingdom or yours?"
"Neither. We're going to Morwen's. She said she could change him back from stone to normal. We asked Kazul last night if we could go out through the caves of fire and night, and she said yes, so..."
"I don't know, Alianora. I'm beginning to get used to myself this way, and there are certain advantages."
"There are disadvantages, too,"
Alianora said, blushing slightly. Cimmerine began to giggle. Alianora's blush deepened.
"I mean, how are you going to get rid of that chip in your sleeve if you can't change clothes?"
"I think I see what you're getting at,"
the stone prince replied, eyeing Alianora meditatively.
"And you're quite right. There's no comparison. We had better see Morwen as quickly as possible."
Alianora and Cimmerine looked at each other and burst into unstoppable giggles. The stone prince blinked at them.
"It's not funny,"
he said indignantly, which only made them giggle harder. Shaking his head, he waited for them to stop, then picked up Alianora's suitcase.
"Shall we go?"
Cimmerine walked with them to the iron gate that led into the caves of fire and night. A purplish dragon was waiting to guide them through the caves. Kazul was taking no chances on Alianora and the Stone Prince getting lost. Cimmerine hugged them both and wished them a safe journey.
"And I hope you both live happily ever after."
"I hope you do too,"
Alianora called back as she and the Stone Prince followed the dragon through the gate. Cimmerine watched until they were out of sight, then started back toward K'Zul's cave. She thought about Morwen and the wizard melting spell, and about Zeminar and Aunt Arel and the other wizards who would somehow be back soon. She thought about K'Zul and about straightening out the treasure vaults that belonged to the King of the Dragons, and about all the hundreds of books in the King's library, and of all the problems that the King of the Dragons would have to deal with. She thought about Alianora's last words and smiled.
Happily ever after?
Cimmerine wasn't sure about that, though she was certainly hoping to enjoy herself. She was positive, however, that life with the dragons would be interesting and busy, and in Cimmerine's opinion, that would go a long way toward making her happy.
Happily ever after? I don't think it's quite what you meant, Alianora,
Cimmerine murmured to the empty tunnel.
But one way or another, I rather think I will.
The cast in alphabetical order. Liz Caldwell, narrator. Bruce Colville, King and Morans. Catherine Colville, fairy godmother. Johanna Elliott, Princess Cimmerine. Nick Foster, Aunt Arel and the Frog. Josh Golden, Princess Therendil and Escort Dragon. Matt Golden, Stone Prince and the Bird. Russell Hankins, Warog and the Djinn. Willard E. Lape Jr., Roxham. Bill Molesky, Zeminar. Lana Quintal, Princess Alianora. Elise Rosenthal, Queen and Princess Caridwell. Carol Schmuckler, Morwen. Gail Sustair, K'Zul. Additional character voices were performed by cast members. Producer, Timothy Ditlow. Director, Bruce Colville. Engineer, Thomas Patrick Scott III. Assistant Engineer, John D. Intout. Production Coordinator, Elise Rosenthal. Music by Thomas Patrick Scott III. Dealing with Dragons was recorded at Todd Hoban Studios, Syracuse, New York. You have been listening to a Words Take Wing production.
We hope you enjoyed this unabridged listening library production. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 1990 by Patricia C. Reedy. Production copyright 1996, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.